welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And do not hesitate to seek his help by having prayer. We are definitely believers in the power of prayer, and we know that faith itself can perform miracles. So please consider engaging with and or consider joining or starting a prayer circle for his providence to basically inspire and help us in the ways we need to, as he would see fit, his will be done, that we can restore his Constitution to this Republic. So the next and final thing that I always say is, so I'm going to dive into this a little bit differently, but I just want you to know and understand, and that's why I'm diving into this differently, that when we look at that debt is fraud. We have a government that has powers of attorney. And when we talk about government, our county, our state, as well as the federal government should be denned and contained. Now, the one government that is really harshly contained because we have never modified or changed the Constitution via an amendment to actually get them out of these hard containments. Remember, Madison constantly pointed out how the Constitution was justified, that the states clearly looked at this federal government as constrained by its enumerations. So what happened? All they needed to do was basically allow attrition to occur so that those people that knew and understood this concept of this power of attorney that the Constitution is, and the containment that it has placed in its ratification so that the states actually understood it to be, you know, this hard, fixed, limited powers, limited and defined powers, roles, responsibilities, etc., those enumerations. So when people died and they didn't understand that anymore, legally, did that change? Did that transpire some metamorphosis of our government to be able to finally do things it couldn't do? No. It is always and will always be, because regardless of how they decided to pervert and subvert our government, they, by definition and by documentation, by the letter of the law in the ratification debates, people just laugh at me and say, well, you know, the ratification debates are not law. In the fundamental tenets, in the nature of constitutions and contracts, when you stipulate that this is what that means, it becomes legally binding. This goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. This goes, I think this transcends life here on this planet. It goes to heaven. Because as things were stipulated, and we were all witnesses to how those things were stipulated, that is what is applied, period. And it will always apply until there is a conscientious effort to change the fundamental contract, to change that power of attorney to a grant more power, take away power, or roles, responsibilities. It doesn't matter. It has to be legally adjusted and or modified and or amended. This is why I tell people that when you're in the process of acknowledging and making a contract, when you create stipulations and understandings, that is the one point in time where you are literally making amendments to that contract. It may not be written amendments, but they are equally hard, fast, and bound, especially if they are written down. They may not be written down and added to the Constitution, but they are equally written down, which means they're equally applicable. This is what scares our legal system, those who are manning the corrupt halls of our justice system. This is what scares the politicians when the truth is being told that they have no authority to do what they're doing. So let's get to the debt. When we read the Constitution, we're going through this now, but I didn't focus on the word credit. When we look at the word credit, it will come up three times in your Constitution, in our Constitution for the United States of America. In other words, the original Constitution, not the annotated Constitution, not this living Constitution that this grand hall of justice and our grand politicians have created this living Constitution to make it what they want it to be. This is why the idea of the annotated Constitution is so abhorrent and so evil, because it is the pretense of government. But anyway, let's focus on credit, because credit comes up three times, like I said, in the Constitution. The first time it comes up is actually in the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8. And it says that Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Does that mean unquestionable credit, or is that so ambiguous that the federal government has the ability to just assume credit for any purpose? No. What that says is they can borrow money on the credit of the United States, which means that those things that the United States has the authority to borrow money for, they can borrow money. If they're borrowing money and spending it on something that they have no authority, then that credit is no good. Now, when you look at, because we're going to dive into this real quick, when you look at the borrower, which is the United States, and the creditor, which could be, let's just say, Britain. Britain has the responsibility when they're giving somebody the money. They have the responsibility to say, now, you're only doing this, you're only using this money for things you have the authority to do. Of course, wink, wink, nod, nod, and Britain, wink, wink, nod, nod, because when that money that gets borrowed is spent on things that they have no authority, such as education, such as labor, such as healthcare, all of these things that they have no authority for. As a matter of fact, any country, any entity that is giving the federal government money at this point in time, because almost 100% of what it is spending money on, almost 100%. I mean, I know the defense system is a large bill, but when we just kind of look at the categories of defenses being one, healthcare being one, you know, it really goes down to a very small percentage. But technically, when we look at the legitimate expenditures that the federal government has been making, legitimate expenditures, they have not had the necessity to borrow money. Or had they actually not ever borrowed money for unconstitutional things, these little war efforts and so forth would have easily been covered by the expense, or I should say by the revenues coming in, you know, at a breakneck clip speed. In other words, when we add up the legitimate defense expenditures from the beginning of 1900 to today, and we look at how much money the government has brought in legitimately, we have an excess of money. Legitimate expenditures from 1900 to today, and the legitimate revenues coming in. We're not talking about this fraudulent debt. Only the taxes and the revenue that the United States legitimately brought in. It more than covers those costs. Now, this is what the audit will do. The audit will actually prove this. When we actually conduct Republic Review, which scares a lot of people, even conservatives are scared of this. They're not scared of the outcome of it, but they're scared of what it will do to them and their organization, because when we finally get the federal government, when we finally get our government into compliance to the law, then what are they going to do? They have to actually get a job now. When we actually have government functioning the way it's supposed to, and we're all participating in government, then we all actually have to get a job, and we have to basically provide for ourselves. And we live in a world, maybe sounds altruistic, but we live in a world where we really, crime will go down or diminish to a point that, I mean, those people that choose to, you know, actually be abhorrent to our law-abiding society, they won't be treated the way we're treating them now. We will no longer be enabling bad behavior. Because when you enable bad behavior, you only beget more and more bad behavior, and you induce and basically encourage people to do bad. But anyway, let's get back to credit. So we've got borrowing money on the credit of the United States. In other words, those things that they're following in right here in Article 1, Section 8, these few things that they have, these responsibilities, these constitutional responsibilities, then they can borrow money for these things. But they cannot borrow money for things that they do not have the authority to borrow. So when's the next time we see credit? Is there another way where we can actually get and assume credit for the United States in a different way than, you know, this credit for the United States? Is it something that, you know, this good faith and credit? Where's this good faith and credit? Well, it's not there in the powers. The next time you find the word credit is in Article 1, Section 10. And this is where the states are forbidden to emit bills of credit. In other words, they can't actually create money based on no backing. And as a matter of fact, they're not even supposed to make any money at all because they're also forbidden to coin money. They can't coin their own money. When we talk to Tammy, we know that Wyoming is out there trying to mint their own gold and silver currency. By doing so, they're violating the Constitution. The states need to force the federal government into minting coins, which is their constitutional duty and responsibility. Again, I believe that it's, you know, it makes sense that we have a commutable bill. In other words, they print a bill and that bill is backed by gold and silver. That there is no bill printed that cannot be backed. In other words, there's no floating or this magical, you know, like the way banks actually, and the way the run on banks worked was the banks would take in money and they would borrow. They'd leverage the majority of 80% of the money that supposedly their investors invested into the bank was actually out actively invested in something else. They only had 20% of the dollars that they had for all of their bank savers. So when Mr. Chase did his run on money, he knew that he had deposited over 20% of the bank's holdings. And he did that deliberately so that he could actually come in and say, I need to withdraw all my money. And what ended up happening was the bank realized that they couldn't give him all of his money because he had deposited way too much into that bank. And so he did this to six banks in New York, and he collapsed the financial system. And in so doing, he did this to undermine our national financial system when the fact of the matter is, you know, he undermined six private banks. Those weren't federal banks, but because people were so scared of losing their money from, you know, nefarious people like this. And this really speaks to, because I had a conversation about this last night. Why is it that we look at these profiteering banks as our only solution for managing money? You know, I really don't work with banks. I work with credit unions. Anybody that works with a profiteering bank, you're doing that at your own risk. But credit unions, they're legally bound to actually maintain their profits and give you those credits and so forth. Now, there are good credit unions and there are really bad credit unions. In other words, they do a really bad job in basically making sure that all of those who are invested are being bolstered up. And they give advantages to certain people over others. Anyway, this isn't about banking. This is about credit. So bottom line, The federal government can only borrow based on the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8 on those things that they have credit for. In other words, those things that they have to spend money on, they can only borrow money for those things. Now, when we look at the states cannot issue bills of credit. In other words, they can't create their own credit either. What's the third time? Oh, it's got to be right here. This is where we're going to find, you know, the holy grail of credit, where they can actually make this debt legitimate. But this is what it says. Article 1, actually not Article 1, Article 4, Section 1, full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. That has nothing to do with borrowing money. And the Congress may, by general laws, prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. Well, they use this credit. In other words, each state is obligated to give credit or credence to the laws of other states as well as the federal laws. In other words, we all have to kind of obey and recognize with equal respect and dignity all of these other states, regardless of how, you know, they do their worship, regardless of how they, you know, at that point in time are executing labor. You may not like what that state does, but that's okay. The full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. Kind of interesting. This kind of speaks to the idea that we're all supposed to get along. And as a matter of fact, is that not the epitome of Christianity? It's actually kind of in the law there that we all have to get along. Whose job is it to make sure that we all get along? The federal government. That's why it's in the Constitution. In other words, we got a parent over this one issue. Now, I say parent. Those powers delegated to the federal government means that they have the supreme authority over these very specific things. So when we're not, you know, getting along and we're giving, you know, one state a hard time and harassing them financially or what have you over slavery or over the production of, you know, cars that pollute the environment or what have you, for whatever reason, it's the federal government's job to come in and bang the heads together of the states and say, look, you guys got to get along. You know, you may not like the fact that they have slavery or they're worshiping this way or they're building cars that, you know, are polluting your environment, creating smog and so forth. Well, California, you don't like that? Make your own cars. Make your own cars. You mean California didn't have the leg or the position under this Constitution to force Detroit and Michigan into building cars the way California wanted them? No, they didn't. Nor did the federal government have the authority or any delegation to be involved in that manner, period. This helps expose the magnitude of tyranny that the states and the federal government have been working together. And as a matter of fact, why didn't Michigan bring up the constitutional position on this? Is it because they didn't care? Or because they had to do their job in bowing to the federal government because now we're at the next step of evil. And as we climb this stairwell of going down into the abyss of evil with this government, that's exactly what happens. We're surrendering more and more, and Michigan was culpable of surrendering sovereignty, their state sovereignty, to the federal government and to California. Just over that one issue. So I just want you to understand that when it comes to the debt that all these nations are bringing, they're running to us with, you know, wheelbarrows. They want to give us money because they're working diligently to collapse us. They see the destruction of America imminent. And with Kamala Harris, Obama, Biden, the Clintons, the Bushes, and so on and so on, Nixon, I could just go on, all the way back to Andrew Jackson, our string of kings, and the new class of royalty here in the Americas, this joke of royalty in America. So, just to be clear, when we see this debt being poured upon us, they're equally culpable in undermining us. But more importantly, they know they're undermining the world, because when they can get America to collapse, when they can get America to actually be incapable of helping any other nation, where we actually have to basically get on our knees and subjugate ourselves to the global communists and become truly ruled with no liberty. It'll be a guise of liberty, but it'll be no liberty. Then they have succeeded, because they have then conscripted the world. The question is, does the world truly get conscripted, or do we actually have the ability to break away and then let the globalists, you know, basically go forward without America? One of the things that they would have to do, and I really believe the reason why the Bible doesn't talk about any world war against America, because when we actually stand up on the truth and we stand up and say, look, you had no authority to actually create a contract with a government that didn't have the authority to take that money. You were equally culpable. You were equally culpable, and you were deliberately doing this to undermine the good people of the United States and the good people of the world. Because so when the United States goes, so goes the world, whether people like it or not. And this is where it actually has to become a broadcast, where every nation, all the people of the world, will need to actually look at their own countries and determine, are they better served by this globalist move to communism, or would they be better served transitioning into the United States as a state in our union under the Constitution? Now, I've told you this is not something that happens overnight, but this has to be methodical, and there has to be a process. To be clear, I even had this conversation last night. We were talking about how many states in the Union, Washington State being one of them, are printing the election information in foreign languages. Why are they doing this, when no foreign person that can't speak English should be able to vote? Why? Because you can't be a citizen if you can't pass a fundamental English test and these laws of naturalization. Ah, so when we look at the amnesty that Reagan provided, that actually violated the Constitution. And Reagan was very culpable in doing that, because it's kind of difficult when you have these pronunciations. An uniform law or a uniform rule of naturalization, when we look at those acts all spell out that for a person to become a citizen of the United States, they have to first, and technically by the very first and uniform act of naturalization, it required that a citizen actually, or person, become a citizen of the state first, then they petition to become a citizen of the United States. Because the citizens, or I should say the state government, is the first filtering process to say, you can't be a citizen here. This keeps people from actually, sneaking in. So when we really look at the design and the credit and so forth, because today's Feedback Friday, and I want to dive into a lot of things that I think are really, really important. But more importantly, as we look at, and as I've talked about this idea that we all have to get along, let me transition into this other paradigm, because it kind of came to me how the conservatives, how the right are so divided, because they're so driven by these passions and paradigms that they're incapable of having a little bit of tolerance and a little bit of forgiveness for those who are like them. As a matter of fact, aren't we all alike? We're here in these bodies. We're here in this state. Not in the state of government, but in this physical state that we all live in. We're all here for a very significant process. And that process is a divine process. And this whole process that we're here for is for a divine purpose, so that we all transition through this state to a new state, to a next state. So what I want to basically dive into is that, and then we'll get into some need-to-know news, because I haven't done that in a long time. But anyway, we'll be right back after this short promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so we've kind of taken an inordinate amount of time going through credit and this principle, this concept, that we're all to get along. We're all to take part, because really, I point this out all the time, that the design of the Constitution is one that obligates every citizen to support and execute the laws. Every citizen. We all have a civic duty to support and defend that Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. You cannot be a citizen if you're not willing to do that. The oath of the citizen actually states that you understand and you will comply to the compulsion of serving. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't have this conscientious objection right. But in those days, they actually had laws that said, if you want to be a conscientious objector, that's fine. But you'll have to pay the wages of whoever replaces you if that's the case. This is why what they tried to do is they've tried to accommodate, because they felt that those laws were unjust or unfair, that you know, would actually punish a poor person who was a conscientious objector. So what they did was they started making these accommodations that, okay, you won't be a person that's going to pull a trigger to kill people or, you know, light the fuse on the cannon where you know that act kills people. What you'll do is you'll be a cook. What you'll do is you'll be a supply or support person. You must support the cause of supporting the Constitution, even though you don't actually, as a person, commit the act of killing somebody with deadly force. We don't want to use the word murder, because we acknowledge that we have enemies and we have a natural right to defend ourselves to whatever extent necessary. This is one of those things that is baked into civil society, not just American, but civil society. This actually came out of Greece, ancient Greece, and even Rome. Even Rome had these concepts. Let me move on. What I was trying to say, and the fact that we're all the same, but we're not all equal in what we do and everything else. I mean, who among us has never won? Is there really a person that's never won anything? They had no success. Are we not all successful in some one thing that we've graduated? And what I want to talk about is those people that are not born with disabilities. Regardless of whatever the disability is, there's still things that people are capable of doing, getting an A, getting a passing grade. Whatever that level of accomplishment is, we've all accomplished. We've all succeeded. We've all won. But we've all lost, too. There's not one among us that hasn't lost, right? There's not one among us that hasn't lost, a friend. They haven't lost. We all lose our parents because we're all human, and parents don't live forever, and we're not going to live forever. We all suffer from the same things. In other words, we're so much alike, regardless of the race and culture, when you boil down humanity, there are these commonalities. And the framers were brilliant in establishing what they called the laws of nature and nature's God, where they all kind of agreed and created a harmonious tone with each other. That's how they were able to put aside their differences and get along. The one thing that they actually had to do at the individual level was they had to put aside their self-interests. And that's one of the biggest problems we have today, because everybody's being driven. And even back in those days, they had a hard time in putting aside one's self-interest. Now, when we actually transition from winning and losing, let's look at this on the spiritual side. Are we not all sinners? Are we not all saints? Now, we live in a time where some people have never had the opportunity because they've been indoctrinated to believe in godless secularism. They never, ever once had anybody hold their hand and say, you know, you are a child of God. You are, you know, a spiritual entity, and be taught that. So what do you do to those people, or for those people who are absolutely lost because of their condition and where they were born and how they were brought up? As a matter of fact, you know, when we look at Christianity and knowing Christ and becoming one as a citizen in his church, do we believe that only those people who lived before Christ can be saved? Because that's a lot of people that lived long before Christ. I mean, those thousands of years before Christ came along. We know that there's been billions of people, billions, not trillions. There's more people than have ever lived on the earth. So I'm just saying that there haven't been a trillion, but we know it's in the billions. Technically, I think mathematically, it would be a stretch to say 100 billion. So not even close to a trillion, but that's still a lot of people. And that's a lot of people that lived before Christ. Were they not saints and sinners? And as a matter of fact, this is where it comes down to: everyone will be saved, and only Christ and our Creator, only our Creator knows what's in our hearts. Were we really cruel? Were we really harsh with each other? How did we really treat each other? Because bottom line, we'll all have to face that judgment. But again, Christianity provides hope for all people. So when we look at, you know, now shifting our focus back to we the people, and, you know, we look at the governments that we've created, and we look at the United States and how most people were saying, you know, the Constitution was created for a righteous nation. I honestly think it was created for a righteous nation to prepare it for the godless secular world that was coming. In other words, he knew, because we could all, anybody that had any foresight, what was going on in Europe and what was happening in America was a stark contrast, because in Europe we saw godlessness coming in. And as a matter of fact, as they became more tolerant, the thing that they became tolerant on was godless secularism. Because Europe was done with having its holy wars of fighting who was more righteous or whose cause was more righteous. And as a matter of fact, in the United States, I have said this and said this and said this, that because the states all had different religious paradigms and there was not a prevailing majority in the states, there is no evidence that one state was loved and blessed more by the hand of God than another. And they were all theologians or theocracies on their own merit. And we can see throughout the world. I mean, there have been scriptures where Israel has been blessed as a nation. And we see that in the Old Testament. We even see that and hear this in the New Testament. All this, these things about the, you know, the his tribe, his nation. But the reality is, we are all saints. We are all sinners. We are all his children. there may be something special about that nation. But I think that the thing that's special about that nation was its curse. Because wasn't Israel the nation where he was born and raised up? And what hasn't Israel been the nation that has denied him? I mean, on its face, it cannot accept him. Because in so doing, then they have to acknowledge that they were wrong. In other words, I think that, you know, when we kind of look at things, it's really ironic, or it's a paradox at best. But the point is that we all have a requirement to get along. And what I want to do is I just want to kind of shift, because I wanted to actually cover some G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News on weather and these other things. But I just feel really compelled to drive home this concept that we are the biggest problem. I say this: when we the people are failing to hold our public servants accountable, that problem is on our shoulders and the blood is on our hands. When we actually excoriate each other, in other words, let's just keep mindful that we're all saints and we're all sinners. And regardless of who that politician is, regardless of their shortcomings, nobody knows how many apples are in a apple seed. Only he knows. And so we need to, you know, if somebody's doing wrong or what have you, then you may not say, I don't want to break bread with you or anything like that, or for whatever reserves you want to throw out there. But we all, as citizens of this United States, need to actually stop treating each other because you're better than them or you perceive them as worse than you. We all, as long as the threshold is, are you supporting the Constitution? Are you willing to defend the Constitution against these people, the Democrats, because they're actually enemies of the Constitution? And have we forgotten that we're all supposed to support and defend the Constitution? But look at the conservatives and how we divide ourselves and say, these people over here that want the convention states are evil. They're not. There may be some evil leaders. There may be evil leaders in these, controlled opposition organizations. What they're doing is they're dividing us so that we can be conquered. Come on, folks. We've got to get it in our heads that we have to quit looking at things in a black and white. We live in a gray world. There are good things about what every organization is doing. There are good people in every organization. Unless it's, an actual satanic cult where people are, barring that, when we're looking at patriotic organizations, at least they're trying. They're on this side of being good. So when we look at public servants, and we have the scorched earth, the only scorched earth that we should have is whether a person is going to acknowledge and pledge and commit to that Constitution. This is where we all have to start moving to the top of the mountain. When we're on the side of the mountain and say, I support these conservative causes, that means you're not on top. And so when we actually start holding people fully accountable to supporting and defending the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic, we need to, the way we need to look at each other is whether we're full supporters of the Constitution or not. It doesn't matter whether they're sins, whatever their sins are they adulterers? Are they addicts? Whatever their problems are, at least if they're willing to take up arms and defend the Constitution, or they're willing to sign the pledge and say, hold me accountable. And if later on they say, I don't want to be held accountable, then you get rid of them. And we have to cast them out. Is that a capital offense? Now, in the old days, I'll tell you, the framers were not very tolerant. They used the capital offense for things such as theft, not just the horse thievery, but theft. They actually threw people in jail if you didn't pay your debt. They had debtor's prison. They were very harsh in basically saying, if you violate a law, you must feel some level of punishment. And there were some things that just quickly, that's a capital offense. Sorry. you have no longer have a right to live because you stole somebody's horse. Wow. Talking about having a hard line of saying, if you cross this line, you're done. These were righteous men. These were righteous men and women because they didn't have a level of tolerance for actually violating other people. It's one thing when you commit a sin and you hurt yourself. You think something, you do something. They didn't kill people. It wasn't a capital offense for prostitution and those types of sins, even though it was abhorrent. They stopped stoning and all of that after Christianity. And I understand the need and this propensity to try to live a higher law of understanding and forgiveness. But I'm just saying that when we look at how harsh the framers were when it came to theft, there was very little tolerance, very little tolerance. But we have become a more and more tolerant nation. But in a way, tolerance is good. But when we become too tolerant, it's bad. And that's how we've gotten to where we are. As a matter of fact, Adam Weishaupt was the one that in his charter for the Illuminati said, we are going to use tolerance and exploit that because that happens to be the wedge that will divide, and this is how we can conquer these righteous people. And it took a long time to get where they are today. So folks, we have to actually start looking at, you know, because I really believe that when it comes down to our elections, we have to choose the lesser of two evil, because there is nobody that is a saint, a pure saint. If Christ was on the ballot, I think he would. Do we live in a time that he would be elected? No, probably not. We already know that the Jews basically denied him. But I truly believe that we would all, anybody that is of righteous nature, would vote for Christ. Absolutely. So how do we get and start moving people in that direction? We actually, and the only way we can do this is by reaching out, deliberately reaching out to the children with the truth. And so I've been talking about this with organizations, and actually we've been talking about this for years. I've even talked about having and tried to inspire people to create a good book that would create a series of exercises as in your home to start teaching your children how evil these people they call teachers in your education system are. So that these your children understand that those people do not love you. They may be nice, they may be treating you really well, but when you move on to the next class and so forth, you'll never be able to go and get money from them. You'll never be able to go and help get support from them. As a matter of fact, once you graduate from high school and you try to seek them out, they're done with you. They're actually focused on trying to corrupt and pervert the children in their classes today. That's their job. They're not family. And what ends up happening is when we start creating friendships, when we start going to school and we start, you know, expanding our social circle, we try to make everybody a part of our family relationship. And that's what a young mind does. And they exploit that. So you have to have something that teaches your children to prepare them so that they don't look at teachers and people that do good things as a part of the family. So that we don't create blind trust for anybody that's not a family member, but we create a level of respect and dignity for all people. And I think that is a very Christ-like way of moving forward. But what we have to do is we have to stop using scorched earth and saying this, you know, Trump, orange man, bad. He's the lesser of two evils, folks. Right now, he's far better than Kamala Harris or what we've got coming from the Democratic Party, period. I don't like the Republican Party. You hear me poke him in the eye all the time. We have to take the Republican Party back because they have nothing to do with demanding full compliance of the public servants that represent their brand. There's a lot of reasons why we need to do what we're doing. A lot of reasons why. But it has to be focused on the Constitution. And one way to do that is, I think, coming together with his spirit in trying to put aside our differences as well as our self-interest. Those two factors are the biggest factors that are keeping us from actually holding hands and singing Kumbaya. As a body conservative, that we become united in demanding full compliance to the Constitution. There's no doubt in my mind, this is the only way back. This is the only way back. It's not, you know, through these other processes. And as a matter of fact, this is why I've said we need a large, it's the best way to put this, we need a large, not a convention, but we need a large forum. It's like a historic point where all of these leaders, I think we all need to be in one room, and I think we all need to basically lay out how the convention of states will solve all our problems. Because once we look at the model and we realize that it can't solve our problems, then I believe most people will say, well, we understand the convention of states, and we understand the purpose of that, but maybe it is outmoded. And we can talk about that. But until we actually have honest conversations, instead of believing that there's only one way, and as a matter of fact, the problem is, how do you become so convinced that it's the only one way if the only thing you've learned is what you've learned? This actually speaks to the differences of churches. One of the things I realized when I got into this gig, when I got into becoming an advocate for the Constitution, is I realized that everybody in the patriotic movement, we're all like evangelical ministers. We're all out there standing on our soapbox trying to preach this one facet of the this magical doctrine of magistrates and how we need to have kings in our life and that our sheriff is the lesser of the magistrate. That's all a perversion of the British theocracy that we cast off. Why is it people are trying to sell that? Because we don't know any better. We actually haven't gotten academically. We have ourselves not actually looked at all of the different processes and actually said, okay, how does this solve the problem? And if it doesn't have the authority to actually force compliance to the Constitution of every level of government and every politician, then it's not the solution. This is one of the reasons why we are seeking that type of audience, because when you actually put all the chips on the table, when we look at the party, when we look at the court, when we look at the convention of states, when we look at the secession, becoming a sovereign citizen, national, state nationalist, or whatever the names are of succeeding out so that you don't have to pay taxes and not being a part. I mean, divorcing yourself is not a solution. So secession or divorce, that's not a solution. The armed rebellion is not a solution. There's no way that we're going to preserve the Constitution and this form of government through an armed conflict. The only way to do it, folks, and this is what has to be done. The only way you get a child to behave is to basically hold them accountable and behave as the way they're supposed to, as the law demands. In other words, interposition is the only way. Which is why when we really start diving into what Madison and Jefferson did, and this is why we spend a lot of time talking about this, is because that is the process of actually taking back our government. It's interposition. And the initial interposition are First Amendment petitions. Isn't it interesting that that's actually in the Constitution? The court system in the Constitution is limited to the jurisdiction of the laws. We have a general court jurisdiction that nobody talks about. It's called common law. If it is not something that the government has jurisdiction, then it needs to go like divorce. Is there anything in your state constitution that covers divorce and marriage? No. Then that would go to common law, a common law court. But they don't want to administer a common law court because they can't make money and they can't control it. Because a common law court has nothing to do with the bar and the bar association, who has seized control of our entire court system. It's that simple. So let me get into, okay, so hopefully I haven't completely lost you and exhausted this topic. But let me start diving into the need to know news, because what I'll probably do is I'll try to cover this on Monday. There's a lot of things I need to cover, and I'm hoping to have a conversation with Matt Hawkins. He's running for state auditor in Washington State, and this is one of the positions that we want to help you understand, getting constitutionalists into your county as state and county auditors, where they actually look at the city and the county government and say, hold on here, you're not in compliance with the Constitution. Because I believe the auditor has the position and the authority to actually start looking to whether you actually have jurisdiction, whether we're following the law or not. It's an interesting thing that we actually created these auditors in our own government to actually hold government, as well as contractors and government spending and these other things, accountable. Even our elections to be held accountable. And when the auditor actually looks at the constitutional process or how elections are supposed to be held, you're going to find, and this is one of the things we're going to be talking about, you're going to find that the federal government has no authority to be involved in a national election system. They have no authority to put their finger on that scale or even in the room with that scale. And yet they've gone out and they've sought these contracts with Dell, the software companies, and now we're under a barrage of all sorts of software that is literally compromising and corrupting our election system. Why are we allowing this to happen? Why? Because the federal government is doing it for us. And they're getting people, they're getting advocates or what have you, to actually run out there and say, look at what we can do for you. We can guarantee you corrupt people win. And that's every step forward is a step into the lower down into the abyss of evil. Because government is in league with doing his bidding. And we have to actually stop. And the only way we stop government from doing his bidding is demanding compliance with the Constitution. And technically, there is no reason why we can't go back to paper ballots and actually voting by precinct and so forth and so on. There's no reason why we actually can't actually have, because we've seen it before, where we actually have the ability to get the outcome within a day of the election. Because if we do it at the precinct level, it's manageable. And, oh, no, we want to have just a few people manage it, because if we actually control those who count and we control the system and the process, we can actually control the outcome. That's why they have taken it away from us. They've moved us down this path deliberately to undermine us. In every way, folks, when we start looking at consolidating, and this is one of the reasons why the federal government had very limited powers. So the point is, we were going to have this conversation with Matt Hawkins, and hopefully we can do this either Monday, next Friday, or whenever we can. And by the way, I'm planning on getting Chip Murray in here, but I also, you need to go to Need to Know News, or needtoknow.news, that's G. Edward Griffin's news agency, where he actually exposes this weather manipulation and so forth. I've got a lot of stuff I wanted to go through today, but bottom line, we actually need to stop, dividing ourselves, and we need to actually start having academic and intelligent conversations of what is the right path, instead of saying, I like this path. We have to start speaking eloquently and smart. I'm J.R. Mobley, we're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.